Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. The following interview is designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be. Your host, Derek Champagne, is the founder and CEO of The Artist Evolution, a full-service agency building successful brands, marketing tools, and campaigns, and also the author of the best-selling book, Don't Buy a Duck. And now, let's begin today's Leadership Series interview.
Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where our goal is to inspire you to become the best leader that you can be. I'm excited about our guest today, Dave Alpern. He is a rock star. Look behind him. You see the video. He's the president of Joe Gibbs Racing, also the author of this new book, Taking the Lead, which I have right here in front of me, Winning Business Principles That Fuel Joe Gibbs Racing. Great book. I'm going to ask you a few questions from out of this book in just a minute. What a great read on leadership, on culture, on building a business, on character, just chocked full of practical and real world advice from your experience in this organization. Since you started in 1993 as an unpaid intern, you've held nearly every position from front office, overseeing consumer products, communications, sponsorships, before being named team president, which is incredible. Some of the clients you work with, first of all, growing from 18 to nearly 600 employees, working with brands such as Toyota, FedEx, Mars, Stanley, Coca-Cola Company, Comcast. And you've been invited, I'm almost done, I promise, but you've been invited to the White House on multiple occasions, not once or twice, but after winning NASCAR championships in 2000, 2002, 2005, 2015, and 2019. So, hey, Dave, I'm going to give you a chance to talk. I've just been trying to set the stage for the quality of who you are. So thanks for coming with us today.
Well, Derek, first of all, look, people love it when others talk about them. So that was actually kind of, I was like, wow, that, I appreciate the introduction. That was awesome. So no, thanks for having me on, Derek. And yeah, when you say all those things, it is a reminder of I feel very blessed for everything that you talked about. So, and I'm grateful to be here this morning.
Well, Dave, when we teach personal branding, we say never make your own introduction. Let somebody else say the introduction for you, because then it's not bragging, and it's just you've got some great milestones that should be shared. So, hey, let's give me some quick highlights, because I just want to hear whatever pops in your mind as far as timelines, like just about you. Who is Dave Alpern? You can go back as far as you want, but just give us a couple minutes about you.
Like I said before, I am a blessed man. Interestingly, I think what sums me up is, and you talked about my book. Most books are written from the perspective of sort of what I call the alpha leader, and I am the opposite. I am more of a reluctant leader, and I think that's what sums up my career, is that I was very comfortable being a chief of staff, sort of the behind the scenes. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm an extrovert. I love people. I do love getting in front of people, but I'm not super comfortable being the guy in charge sometimes, and so I was very comfortable for 20 years of my career being sort of Joe Gibbs's chief of staff. I worked with his son, JD, who at the time was our president. And, you know, 6 years ago, when I took the job of president, it was through a very difficult set of circumstances, an illness, and then ultimately a death to JD Gibbs. And so I would say for me, if there's anyone listening that maybe can relate to not being the type, you know, sort of the alpha leader, but more of a reluctant leader, well, that's me. And so I think that probably sums up my career, is always kind of the behind the scenes guy, and then all of a sudden sort of thrust into a leadership position that I'm not always totally comfortable with.
Dave, I didn't tell you the premise of the show, but thank you so much. But basically, I woke up one day and realized that I was the leader leading the teams. And I didn't want to get out of bed that morning, because I realized two things. One is I was a leader, like I was in front. And number two is I realized I was an unintentional leader. And the reason this show started was to be on a quest to talk with leaders like you who have been through the trenches and the journey to be intentional. So I appreciate you sharing that. I want to talk right away with some questions for you. Out of be a fountain, not a drain, in chapter 3. Tell me the inspiration behind that. You've got, first of all, this book, so many great takeaways, but then you have great takeaways at the end of each chapter too, which are great recaps.
Well, thanks. Well, again, as somebody who has imposter syndrome, which many of your listeners may have, where you feel like I have no business being in this job, there are a lot of things that I always describe, that to be a great leader many of the things are just a choice. And you know, you don't have to look, I'm a guy that can say I'm not necessarily the best at any particular thing. You know, I'm not the greatest athlete. I'm not the most dynamic this or that. I'm not the best at math. So I made a career out of what are things I can make a choice on each day that can set myself apart. And being a fountain and a drain is one small example that every person, I don't care if you're, you know, working in a cubicle on spreadsheets all day and you don't interact with a lot of people, or whether you're leading teams or whether you're anyone in between. One small example is the posture in which you go into every interaction is a choice. Are you going to be a fountain or are you going to be a drain? Let me give you an example. In my office, I have a glass window next to my door. So I have about a 2-second warning before anyone comes, you know, knocking on my door. I see them go past the door. And there are literally two types of people. There's the one where when they walk by the thing, I literally exhale a little bit and go, oh, this is going to be tough. Because I know they're coming in to complain. They're coming in to identify a problem with no solutions. They're coming to gossip, whatever it is. And they are literally going to suck the life out of me for the next 5 to 10 minutes. And then there's the type of person who, when they walk by, I literally get out of my chair to greet them at the door, because I know this is a person that's about to breathe life into the interaction that we're about to have. Wow. And what that looks like is they're going to be an encourager. They're going to, they may be coming to me with tough news, but they're coming to it with a posture of, hey, I'm about to roll my sleeves up and we're going to solve this together. We're going to be a team. They're going to care about me. They're going to ask something about me. They're going to come into it with the idea that, hey, I'm going to breathe life into this interaction. And it sounds simple, because it is. and I don't care if you're I say in there, you may have a stressful job. You may be an ER doctor. That doesn't mean you can't be a fountain. And it's a choice you make every day. And again, when I was an unpaid intern, hey, I kind of made the decision, I'm not going to drain anybody. I want to be that guy that everyone's like, we need to get Dave in here because he's going to breathe life into this meeting or whatever. And it's not just blowing sunshine. It's actually saying, hey, I'm going to help you with solutions. How can I help you? How can I serve you? Not how can I take from you? You know, I'm thinking about you, not me. And that's part of being a fountain and not a drain. And everybody listening knows people who are both. You know, you're thinking right now of names of, ooh, that person's kind of a drain. That person, so.
But Dave, when you're saying that, for me as a CEO of a small organization, when you just described that person that's going to come in and help figure it out, as they come in with ideas and wants help, I thought, man, I mean, we've got a great organization. I thought, man, leaders and organizations are starving for that type of person that will come in and grab the baton and help figure it out. And they don't have to have the biggest qualification.
Well, that's the whole point. It has nothing to do with title. And, you know, leadership is about influence, and people want to be around people that are fountains. And so, I talk in my book about becoming indispensable. What does that look like? How do you become that indispensable person that your boss or your owner says, oh, he or she, untouchable, can't do without them. They're too valuable. Part of that's your attitude. And again, small thing like being a fountain or a drain is a choice we make every day. Are you moping around? Are you complaining about stuff? Are you talking behind people's back, or are you the opposite? And again, people, you know, you get figured out pretty quick. And so again, it's a choice you make every day. And, you know, be a fountain, don't be a drain.
Love that. Thank you for explaining it. It was great to read. It's even more fun to hear you talk about it. In the most important question, you talk about a true north in that chapter. Tell me about, I want to hear, like, from your understanding of leadership and from experience, this, I mean, you've had a once in a lifetime experience that you've been a part of, and you've helped build it, but it's been amazing for you.
Sure.
What does it take to have a true north, or is that something you can find if you're not sure what it is?
Well, I think as an organization, we talk about every organization having a true north. What is your one, if you could break down the purpose of your company, kind of your daily objective into one sentence, what is it? And from us, hey, we got in the racing business. We race cars. We were racing against other teams that had been in it longer. Many of them had owners who were billionaires. We knew the only way we were going to stay in business was if we focused on one thing. And that one thing was, every decision we've made for 30 years, we ask the one question, will this make us go fast? Sounds really simple, but Our true north has been, we need to go fast. And when you were a small business with 15 people and we didn't have a huge budget, I'm telling you, when we would buy things, we would say, does this make us go fast or not? Because our philosophy was, if we lead the most laps and win the most races, everything else will take care of itself. Sponsorship, marketing, recruiting people. If you focus on those things, you're going to lose sight of be really fast. And I say all the time in terms of influence, nobody cares what you think if you stink. So you better be really good at what you do if you want to influence anybody. You know what I mean? If you're, it applies, you know, as an employee, and that's kind of a whole nother topic, but getting back to the true north. So for Joe Gibbs Racing, I think Coach Gibbs has done a great job, whether it's hiring people, when he leads people, everything comes back to that. Go fast. I use an illustration in the book about the mantra for that was, or the symbol for that was a sign out front of our building. For 15 years, Joe Gibbs Racing did not have a sign because the business park we lived in wanted, that we work in, wanted too much money to build this sign out front. And every year when capital purchase decisions would come up, that would go up on the board. And, you know, those of us that, you know, deal with sponsors would kind of be like, hey, we'd really love the sign,
right,
so we can tell people where we are. And it would come down to, well, it's that or a piece of equipment that's going to make us go fast. And, wow, and year after year, we would decline the sign and it became a symbol. So people knew if they're not getting a sign, they're definitely not going to get, they're not going to say yes to the thing I want that doesn't focus us on going fast. And it reinforced this idea. And so whatever your business is, whether you're a small entrepreneur or you work for a big company, obviously you got to have a true north and everyone needs to know what it is. And on top of that, so that's your mission. What's really, really important is that every single person in the organization knows what is my role in that mission. Every person. I don't care if you're the janitor. I don't care if you're at the front desk. I don't care if you're the president. What, where do I fit in making us go fast at Joe Gibbs Racing? And that's something that if you ask anyone here, they know what their role is in the mission. And I think that's important to make sure your people know where do they fit in your, what's the mission and what's my role in it?
Wow. Yeah. Amazing, Dave. Thank you. So just, yeah. I want to add another question to that question.
Yeah.
To that answer, because I'm just curious, as I think of, you know, first of all, this book is great for us. This content is great for leaders, but for aspiring leaders too.
Yeah. I think
for student leaders. So, did you always have that focus and vision? Did your company always have that? Or is it something that you dialed in along the way? Like, is it a tribute to Joe and him just having that laser focus? Like, yeah, we're always looking for that secret sauce. Like, okay, but have that, how do I get that? Or so what is your experience with finding that? Or did you always see it?
No, I think it started absolutely with our leader. And again, I have the I have the pleasure of working for a two-sport Hall of Famer. I mean, he's in the NFL and NASCAR Hall of Fame for a reason. And in the NFL, it was the same thing. He had a known enemy every week. He had to prepare for them. And you either win or lose, you look up at the scoreboard. And, you know, Coach used to say all the time, I can't imagine having a job where I go to work every day and don't know if I won or lost. Wow. Whereas in the NFL, yeah, hey, every week there's a scoreboard. Right. People either boo you or they cheer you. In racing, it's the same thing. We throw all, you know, all this stuff together. We show up at a race. They throw the green flag. And at the end, you either get a trophy or you go home as a loser. And unfortunately, in racing, 39 people lose every week and only one wins. So, you know, your odds of winning are much lower. So I think early on, the tone was set from our leader. And I think that is true of every company, that the mission starts with the leader and then it drops down to your culture, which again, I talk a lot about as well. And the culture, again, is a reflection of your leader and your leader's values and what's important to the leader.
Did your leadership have, was there a clear set of personal values as well?
Absolutely. And I think Coach was always very outspoken to the group. Again, I describe the culture at Joe Gibbs Racing. Again, you've got your mission, your true north that you talked about, and then you've got the culture of the company. And for us, I describe Joe Gibbs Racing culture as a three-legged stool, and the three legs of it have been reinforced from Coach for 30 years. It's honor God, put people before profits, and relentlessly pursue winning. Those are our three things in that order. And so Coach communicates that. He says, you know, look, I, you know, again, for him in his life, it's, we got to honor God with what we're doing. Too much is given, much is expected. So what does that look like? That looks like, you know, being generous. And, you know, we give to 80 different ministries around the world, and we have them come in and talk to our employees. We try to be good stewards, people before profits. Hey, you need to make decisions based on what's right and what's good for your people before. And by the way, that's self-serving for companies. When you take care of your people first, profits are a byproduct of that, for the record. And then third goes back to the mission, relentlessly pursue winning. And so the culture is a product. It starts with the leaders, and it starts with the leaders who work for the head leader buying into that mission and buying into that culture. Because if each leader isn't a reflection of, in our case, honor God, put people before profits, and relentlessly pursue winning, the culture will change. So it's Joe finding people who are like-minded, who have that same, who put the same priorities in their life. And so, again, it's difficult. It was easier when we had 15 people. Now we're up over 500. It's difficult. You know, we used to have 15 people. We have 60 managers now. So getting 60 managers to all buy into something can be difficult because we move at such a fast pace. It's so high pressure. Everything changes so quickly. So that's a long answer to say, but again, it is all a reflection of the leadership.
Yeah, thank you. In one of your chapters, I think chapter 13, you talk about treating people as transactions, which is kind of a progression of what you just shared, or treating people as souls. What does that mean?
So J.D. Gibbs, Joe's oldest son, who was my best friend, and we lost J.D. 3 years ago to a horrible illness, but J.D. was kind of he set the tone in the culture in this area. And the way I describe that is, everyone knows what it's like to be treated like a transaction when you interact with somebody. You know, it's, hey, how you doing? They're shaking your hand, but they're looking over your shoulder already for the next more important person. Or when somebody interacts with you and it's very clear, they have something either that they want or it's all about performance. And I summarize it this way. Soul-based transactions focus on the person. Transaction-based interactions focus on performance. So again, obviously sometimes we got to deal with performance and work, but you know when somebody is either, again, they're treating you as a cog in their wheel to get to get what they want, or are they actually valuing me as a human being? And so treating someone like a soul means just that. It means, hey, everybody that you deal with, they have a soul, they have goals, ambitions, they have a family, they have feelings, they have a heart, you know, and how can I make them feel that way? That I'm going into an interaction with a posture of thinking of you first and not me first. And again, it's a small thing, but I think we need to treat our customers like souls. We need to treat our employees like souls. And if you're treating everybody just like a transaction, again, that's not leadership in my opinion. And so that can be difficult because when it's stressful and there's bullets flying, there's people flying in your office, it's easy to just start barking out. And look, hey, sometimes there's time for that. You're coaching in the middle of a game, you're not getting all warm and fuzzy. But the point is, when you're interacting with people, it's going at it with a posture of, I am going to treat every person that I deal with, whether they're, again, the person at the front desk or the CEO, I'm going to treat them the same. I'm going to treat them like that, like they're a valuable, wonderfully created, unique human being who has a soul. And it comes out in the way that you treat people if you go in it with a posture of that.
I love that. Thank you so much, Dave. I appreciate that. I want to ask you as well, another chapter in Principle 4, as you talk about Toyota's belief that there is no best, only better, helps to guard them against complacency. When I read through this, I picked questions that I want to ask you too, because I want more depth in it too. Talk to me about that, about pushing yourself and work and no best, only better.
Well, first of all, Toyota, you mentioned Toyota, you know, they're our biggest partner. They've been with us since 2008. And I learned the greatest part of my job is that I am literally getting like an on the job MBA from the most brilliant, you know, executives at these great companies, and Toyota being, you know, one of those. And so, one of the amazing things, you know, here's a company that, you know, just does amazing in every category. And then, you know, Camry's the best selling, you know, sedan for 18 straight years. And which, by the way, is all because of NASCAR. But they're never resting on their laurels. It's never, hey, we're the best. Let's all go party. Let's go on vacation. No, it's, hey, let's focus on areas that we can get better. Let me illustrate an example of how that manifests itself in our company, you know, something that we've learned from them. In 2019, we set the record. We won 19 out of 38 races. Again, in most sports, going 500 is not very good, but in NASCAR, right, it had never happened. We won 19 races. Wow. There were three races where we finished first, second, and third. So we have four cars that race against each other. It's very unique. You know, it's like having four of your kids in the same race every week. You know, they're not all going to win. So very unusual to finish 1, 2, 3 with your own cars. Well, it happened three times that year. And I remember one particular Monday after we finished first, second, and third. And we have a competition meeting where all the drivers and crew chiefs get together. They download. Look, I didn't expect cake and balloons, but I figured, you know, look, we are kicking everyone's rear end this year. We just finished first, second, and third. I'm going to get in here and there's going to be some high fives and whatever. And I mean, it started off, okay, our pit stops were terrible. Here's five things that we need to get better on. Hey, great job on this, but we're going to get better. And then this driver's arguing with that driver about something. And I literally, I leaned over to the guy next to me and I said, didn't we finish first, second, and third this weekend? And my point is, great teams aren't complacent. They're always wanting to get better. We easily could have said, hey, folks, we've made it. We are the best team this year. Great job. Everybody take the week off. It is never like that. And again, that can be exhausting because it's this constant push. But again, I go back to nobody cares what you think if you stink. We're called to be great. That's our mandate. And so being great means getting better all the time. And so I see that lived out every day, again, in the company that I work for. And a lot of that is a great example from our friends at Toyota. And it's why they're the best, because they're always pushing. They may say, oh, no best, only better. I would say they're the best, but they're always getting better.
Well, you'd say they're the best because they're living it out. And
absolutely.
And what you said earlier, what is it? No one cares what you think if you stink. I really love that. I mean, and look, we won't get stuck on this, but in our influencer world now, where it's all image in so many ways, the image comes before sometimes substance, and it should be the opposite. So, hey,
and if you talk about employees real quick, I was going to say,
please.
That applies to if you're an employee and you're getting in late, or you're gossiping, or you're dogging it on your work, and then you want to lecture somebody about something, no one's going to care what you think. They're going to go, that's not a person I want to be like. On the flip side, again, if you're that fountain that's the team player, that's encouraging people, that's thinking you, not me, all of a sudden, now you have influence because you're somebody they're going to say, hey, when you have something to say, people are going to listen because they're going to go, that guy, you know, or that girl, I want to be like them. I want to know what they have to say. So it affects your influence, whether you're a person, whether you're a company. Be great at what you do, and that's going to elevate your platform.
Dave, I could talk to you all day, but we've got a couple more minutes, and I want to be respectful of your time. But I truly appreciate the value you're sharing today. Just a few more general questions. We'll step away from the book because we could talk about this book all day and the lessons here. But tell me about just a moment that you're most proud of. It could be a small moment or a big moment that stands out to you. Just there's no wrong answer here. Just anyone that stands out to you, top of mind.
Yeah, I think for me, it's, you know, the greatest joy I get from my family is from my job is the joy that it gives my family. So I have three boys. They're twins that are 25. They graduated from Chapel Hill, and I've got my youngest is down at Belmont in Nashville, and my beautiful wife, Stacy. And so for me, honestly, it's those, you know, winning the Daytona 500 with my family there and having a job. You know, what was great affirmation for me was when my boys grew up, I was very intentional about balancing and trying to be a great dad and be there. And again, were there things I missed? Of course, I try not to beat myself up about it, but I feel like I did the best I could. And as your kids get older, they start to appreciate that and they start to appreciate what you do for a living. And so now my sons are in the business world. They love my job. They love talking to me about it. And so honestly, for me, there are many moments, but it's those victories of like winning a championship or winning a Daytona 500, not because of the joy that it gave me, but the joy I could see my family getting to be, that I have a job that my family has gotten to come to. Again, there's a lot of jobs you can't really bring your family to and have them enjoy a big moment, but in a pro sport, they can. And that affirmation for me of my boys have grown up watching this and being a part of it is really, really special to me. And feeling like I actually did this the right way. Hey, I was able to build a successful career and be a good dad, which is a hard balance to have. And it's one of the reasons I wrote a book, because I wanted this to be a legacy to encourage other dads that you can do it. You could be, you know, you may not be the best in the world at one thing. I'm okay with that. I just want to be good. I want to be good. I want to be really good. But if I've got to sacrifice some things to be a great dad, I'm going to do it. But you can do both.
Yeah, that's encouraging. Thank you. I've got a 10 and a 12-year-old. So thank you that they're going to maybe look back someday.
Yeah,
and appreciate or be excited about what I think is a fun career, right? So that's great. I like to hear that. Yeah. You obviously
they're at that age where you're still a rock star. Yeah.
Yeah, I get to coach my son's basketball, we watch sports together. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Awesome. So we're in that sweet window. But hey, last question for you. Just, you have a full cup, obviously. I mean, you have a full cup mindset. It's what you've talked about. It exudes from you, which I love. My favorite kind of person to learn from. We're here to learn. Any last thoughts that are top of mind for you that you just want to share? Anything on your heart that's top of mind from recently as far as an encouragement to our listeners?
Yeah, no, look, even when it's easy, life's hard. That's what I tell people all the time. Life is difficult, man. There's a lot going on. The world's divided, you know, and much of everyday life is a grind. I mean, it's not, you know, and social media doesn't help, because you see and you're like, well, everyone else is doing all these awesome things and this stinks, right? You know? I just want to encourage people, control what you can control. I mean, for me, my faith is really important. I try to spend time in the morning, spending time with God and reading the blueprint for my life. Spending time with the people who matter most and investing them is really important. So being intentional, it doesn't happen on accident. So I want to encourage people with that, to figure out the things that give you life, the people that breathe life into you, and be strategic about figuring out how to spend time with them. If you don't have a lot of time, spend your commute calling the people that encourage you the most, or be intentional about setting up a coffee or a dinner with those people, whether that's your family, friends, mentors. I just think that's really important. And just the last thing would be for those who maybe are aspiring leaders and think, gosh, I don't have that profile of Joe Gibbs, the dynamic. Look, in my opinion, the two most important traits of a leader are character and authenticity. They're not being the smartest, being the best looking, being character and authenticity, things that you can control, and use your sphere of influence, however big or small that is, to just be a fountain and to encourage people. And again, if your sphere grows, great. If your sphere's one person, man, be a fountain to that one person, whatever it is. And so I just want to encourage you with that.
Dave, thank you so much. Yeah. Again, a plug for your book, Taking the Lead, Winning Business Principles That Fuel Joe Gibbs Racing. We'll make sure we put links to order that as well.
Awesome.
Dave Alpern, thank you so much for spending time with us today. Really appreciate it. Your time is valuable, and I appreciate the wisdom you've shared with us.
Hey, Derek, this will be the highlight of my day. So thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. This interview was designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be.